What's better in life than a bottle of wine, great food, and an amazing conversation?
My name is Kate Sullivan, and I am the host of To Dine For.
I'm a journalist, a foodie, a traveler with an appetite for the stories of people who are hungry for more. Dreamers, visionaries, artists, those who hustle hard in the direction they love. I travel with them to their favorite restaurant to hear how they did it. This show is a toast to them and their American dream. To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by Terlato Wine Group and American National Insurance. To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by Angostura. If you've ever made a cocktail at home, you've most likely shaken Angostura bitters into your cocktail at the very end of the cocktail making process. In addition to bitters, Angostura has been making world-class rum for more than 130 years. The next fall cocktail you make, try the beautiful, smooth flavor of Angostura rum. It will transport you to the Caribbean islands of Trinidad and Tobago. The House of Angostura will celebrate its 200-year anniversary of turning drinks into cocktails in 2024. Cheers, everyone. To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. For 115 years, American National has remained committed to helping people and communities make a real difference in their lives. American National supports great local community organizations led by the kind of people you hear about on To Dine For, people who are inspired to make a difference and inspire others in return. American National's philosophy is helping where it's needed helps us all. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, and the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Dine For, the podcast, where we meet the world's most creative and innovative minds at their favorite restaurant. On today's episode is Danny Rose.
You get so engulfed in everybody else's dreams, you don't really make room for your own. You can't think for yourself. You're so invested in what they want for you that you don't make space to actually get clear for what you want for yourself.
Danny Rose is a self-taught home cook and cookbook author who became an internet sensation after sharing her childhood memories and delicious yet unexpected recipes with the world. Her cookbook, Danny's Juke Joint Comfort Food Cookbook, is filled with amazing Southern-inspired home cooking recipes and the memories that inspire them. Please enjoy my conversation with Miss Danny Rose. Danny, how are you?
I'm doing amazing.
I am so excited to talk to you, to hear about the genesis of your cookbook and your career. So first of all, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. But before we get started, I'm going to ask the question that I ask all my guests at the very beginning, which is if you could take me to one restaurant anywhere, where would you take me?
You know, I was looking forward to this question. I was looking forward to this because, you know, it's so funny. My favorite restaurant is not in America. No, honey, it is not. It is in Toronto, Canada.
Really?
So long story short, short story long. Okay. Let me tell you how I stumbled upon this amazing, fantastic restaurant. So I do a show with Food Network called The Big Bake. And so I'm a judge on there. And so the first time I did the series, I was not able to go and do anything, no sightseeing or any of that. Number one, it was COVID. And then two, it was like blizzards every day. Of course, we still got the show done. But this time when I went back to do another season, I was able to get out and really enjoy myself this time because they didn't shoot it in the dead winter. Okay. So I stayed downtown and everybody was telling me about different places that I should go. Number one, Toronto's food is just incredible.
It's a great
I did
scene.
Not know.
Yes.
I didn't. Like I said, last time I was locked in. Okay. And so I was able to do anything. But I stumbled, my hairstyles and I, we were walking off King Street downtown. And so we stumbled across this restaurant called Miss Lickamore's.
Miss Lickamore's.
It is a it's a Caribbean inspired restaurant. And this restaurant just knocked me off my rocks. Do you hear me?
Yes.
It is just incredible. The vibe, the number one thing I look for in a restaurant, Kate, is how does the restaurant make me feel when I come in?
Yes.
And so as soon as we walked in, because I was raised in Alabama and my dad's Juke joint, it gave me that sense of like togetherness mm-hmm. and like the feel of home. Even though it's really beautiful restaurant, it's still very dainty and kind of small. And the tables are kind of close together. The music is incredible. The lighting was kind of slightly dim. I mean, the people were just welcoming. It's just fantastic. The food, the vibe, the way it made me feel, it was just tingling down my little spine, honey. And I went back. I was in Toronto 2.5 weeks. I went 6 times.
No, you did not.
6 times.
Okay. And what was, give me an example of a dish. What did you eat?
Oh, girl, I ate it all. Okay. I ate everything on that menu. I went 6 times. So one of my favorite things on the menu is the fried fish. The way that they fry fish is so different than the way that we fried in the South. And so it is a whole snapper mm-hmm. that is fried, that is served with the head. And they also do these pickled vegetables on the side that are so just sweet and tangy and delicious to cut the fattiness and the richness of the fish.
Yes.
And they also do this little, it's their version of chimichurri, but I feel like they use callaloo in it.
Okay.
You know, to go with fish as well. Then they have steak. The steak is incredible. The jerk chicken, incredible. The rice and peas, incredible. The patties, I've had everything on the menu. The oxtails, everything on that menu is just divine. The scallops, they had a scallop crudo dish that was just so clever and thought out. It's not for everybody, but it was just for me. So when it came to the table, people didn't really like it. I ate it all, you know, so everything on that menu is just incredible. And of course, the executive chef is a woman and she is just out there banging it out.
I love it.
I have no regrets.
Okay. First of all, I love everything about the story you just told. I love that you did it on a trip. Not only was it a work trip, but a travel experience, because I feel like travel opens up our horizons and we learn so much from eating in different countries. I also feel like Caribbean food is akin to soul food, Southern cooking. But it's different. It's akin, but it's different. Mm-hmm. And it is much more fish-based. And it is, but it has a true comfort to it. And it leaves you wanting more, right? Like you want to come back for it, right? It's not food you're like, that's polite, that you try once and you're like, that was nice. You want more of it, just like you do with soul food. You know, you don't want to just, no one has soul food and likes it and never has it again. That just doesn't happen.
Right. It's like kissing cousins. That's what we say in the South. Yeah. Like kissing cousins. Caribbean and soul food, they're just like kissing cousins. That's all.
Yes.
And you are absolutely right, because we, every off day, which we don't get many, the show is so compact and compressed with doing those episodes, but every single off day, or if we got off early, we would hit Miss Lickamore's. We did enjoy some other restaurants that were there. Don't give me, you know, I love Cactus Club and all the other places, but there was just something about Miss Lickamore's that made me want to keep going back over and over and over again. And it is the way that it made me feel first. And people will always, they'll forget a lot of things, but they'll never forget how something made them feel.
Yes.
And that thing made me feel like I was back at home, like I was with my family. But it's just a well thought out restaurant. And I encourage everybody, if they are in Toronto or they're going to Toronto, to really stop by Miss Lickamore's.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. All
right. It's sort of like that Maya Angelou quote, right? People will forget, you know, what you said and what you did, but they'll never forget how you made them feel.
How you made them feel. And that's true, honey. That's with food, restaurant,
it crosses everything.
It don't even matter.
Yes. In business, you name it. I agree. I'm really curious to hear how you grew up, where you grew up. You mentioned Alabama and a little bit about, you know, when you were in high school, what you wanted to do and who you wanted to be.
Oh, man, that's such a great question. Ain't nobody ever asked me that before.
Really?
And I've done a million interviews, and that's such a great question. So when I was I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, on the west side of Birmingham, Alabama. And anybody that's from Birmingham know the west side is a very rough area.
Okay.
They cleaned it up a lot now. I went back home doing my book, but, you know, I'll talk about that later. But it was not in the most welcoming environment to kind of grow up in. But we made it work, and it actually made me who I am today. I had a good time growing up in that. But if you're not from there, you know, you'll go and be like, okay, well, where are we at? Get me out of here. But I grew up in my dad's Juke joint in Birmingham, Alabama. And so I've been around food and entertainment and music all of my life. And so what many people don't know is that I actually have a background in music. So I thought I was going to be a singer. So I grew up in church singing. I was singing in church one day, and then I'd be at the hole in the wall singing that night. You know what I mean? Singing for tips and all type of stuff. And this is before I even turned 18. So I started out thinking that my career was going to be in singing. And in high school, I actually was into sports, and I also was still into singing. So everybody thought I was going to be this big singing star, honey, and it didn't turn out that way. It did not turn out that way at all. But I always had a passion for food growing up because I just grew up around food, mm-hmm. being in my dad's juke joint and my mom and her girlfriends. You know, we get together every Sunday or during the weekend and just entertain themselves and have a lot of food. So high school was a very interesting starting point for me when it come down to my independency. Mm-hmm. I actually left home in high school at 15 years old.
There
was
wow.
a lot of interesting things that was going on in my household. It got better. They always say it gets greater later. And so it got better later on in my life. But it wasn't, I will say, an environment that was conducive a lot of times for a child. As I've gone through therapy, I've realized, you know, mm-hmm. that it was just a really rough and tough environment to grow up in, considering the way that my dad was structured. Not my mom. My mom is just so chill and just, she's just incredible. And I always wondered how she stayed married to a man like that, that crazy for 40 years. But my dad was a very interesting person. And so one side of him was just very jolly and very kind. And, you know, just, you just wanted to be around him all the time. And the other part of him, you know, he drank a lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. You growing up in the juke joint, of course, that's what you're going to do. That's all that's in there. It's people that drink. And so that side of him was not so pleasant. And so I made a decision, didn't know at the time that I was making that decision to leave because I had no idea why, but now I know later on in my life now, it was, I feel like an emotional abusive situation for
absolutely.
Me growing up in that type of environment.
It's so funny how life leaves breadcrumbs as to where we're supposed to go and what we're supposed to do. And obviously, the experience singing in your dad's juke joint really left an indelible impression because it led to the book that you recently wrote.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
oh,
it was, yeah, it was definitely a defining moment for you. Talk to me about, you know, you're on a new path. You left home.
Yeah.
What is your first job?
At 15, I had no idea what I was going to do.
I know, but that really speaks to your sense of intuition and your sense of wanting to figure it out on your own and wanting to be in a healthy environment. So like, I applaud you for that.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your path and what were your first few jobs and how did you know that cooking was right for you?
This is why I always tell people, don't count anything out. All of us have so many different talents that we do not know is there until we put ourselves in the right condition to bring out all those different talents. So a bunch of my talents, I've done makeup. I went to cosmetology school. I was a singer and food was the last thing that I ever thought I was going to do ever in my life. I remember growing up, my mom used to tell me, because listen, where we from, your mom had to go to work during the day, your parents, and you got to stay at home. And so my mom would leave me at home with my brothers and she would say, don't turn on that stove, don't do anything. But the 9-year-old in me, the 10-year-old in me would turn on the stove and want to just cook things that I saw on the Food Network. I'm like, I can do that. But I realized we didn't have those type of ingredients. Watching the Food Network made me want to explore in food. And, you know, and so I had my favorite shows I would watch and then I would just want to be in the kitchen. And so while my mom was at work during the day, during the summertime and stuff, I would turn on the stove. I was very disobedient. And, you know, I would make these things. I would take things like potted meat. We didn't have a bunch of stuff, you know, potted meat with celery or whatever we had in our pantry. And I would literally cook this stuff down on the stove and I would have my brothers trying and they like, oh, that is so good. You know, and this is at me at 9 and 10, just being defiant.
Yeah.
Didn't know why I was being that because it was just something in me that wanted to be creative, that wanted to to just get in the kitchen and do these things. And so I just really looked at it as it being a hobby, you know, for me. Never thought in a million years it would be something that I would be doing full time or that would launch me into something that would eventually turn out amazing for me. So that was one of my talents. And then I just went back to music, you know, because everybody around me was, I'm a church girl. So everybody's like, you know, you're going to be a singer. Mm-hmm. The Lord's going to use you. And I'm like, yeah. And it wasn't until I got to college, I went to Morgan State University. And I got into college. I had, now, that's why I said, Kate, I have a long story, but we don't have all that time. But I got to college. I left Birmingham at 18. Don't ask me how I graduated high school, honey. It was by a wing and a prayer. I was working at the Piggly Wiggly. I was doing all type of stuff. I had my friends doing my homework for me. It was just all
you were delegating. Crazy. You were delegating. Yes. Even then.
I guess I've always been a boss lady. Okay. So I left one of my friends, she told me, she said, I'm going to move to Baltimore. You should go with me. You should get out of this city and you should go. And I was like, girl, Marsha, I don't got no money. You know, I don't have this. I don't have that. And then also our other friend, Tyrese, was already there getting his master's. And so he came home one year. And he said, you need to leave here. I was in an abusive relationship with a guy because at the time I'm out here just trying to survive as a teenager. And so they knew about my situation and they said, you got to get out of this city. And so he told me, he said, if you can get accepted into this school, you can audition for the choir and then you can move, like just get accepted. And I got accepted. I got in the car with Marshall because she was leaving that weekend after Christmas. And I said, I don't care if I get accepted or not. I'm getting in this car with you. Mm-hmm. And so it's crazy. We left, got on the road and school had kind of opened back up after the holiday. And I talked to this guy named Fred. I never forget on the phone. And I said, I've taken my ACT because my friend's mom made me take it. She's like, at the end of the day, you're going to take this ACT and you're going to at least graduate high school to take your ACT. You never know what's going to lead you. And I'm so glad that I did because he said, do you have an ACT score? I said, I do. And so I got accepted to Morgan State on the phone, headed to Morgan State.
Oh, had my no God. Idea. Did he accept you? Was he an admissions counselor? And he accepted you right there on the spot? Or
right there. He said, just make it here. Just make it here.
Wow. God bless him, Fred.
I just had faith and just knew that it was something out there that was bigger and better for me. And I also had people around me that saw that in me. Mm. Even though, you know, I was in a situation that was kind of tough, my friends at the time were like, you deserve more than where you are. Mm. And so sometimes, you know, it takes those people being able to see more for us than we can see, you know, for ourselves at the time.
Yes.
And I got in that car, I told Marsha, I said, you're not leaving me, girl. Uh-uh. I got in that car. We drove to Baltimore. And it's so funny because that's when my parents and I, we kind of started to gel our relationship back together, my dad and I, and my mom was just still so supportive that she actually rented the car for us on her American Express to get us to Baltimore. She said, I know that you deserve more than what is here. And so whatever I can do to help you. And they gave me $400 and we got in the car and we got to Baltimore. I went straight to admissions, talked to Fred. He got me in there. And then I said, well, I don't have no money. And so I said, but I can sing. And at the time, Morgan State University was like the number one choir in the world. And so I auditioned for the choir and got a full scholarship. All this happened within days of me being there.
Wow.
I had nowhere to stay either.
Let me just stop you there because isn't it a testament to, first of all, getting on the right road, like just heading in the right direction, luck, because you had some luck in there. And then you also... you were prepared to work. You were prepared to do it. And the fact that you had that desire, that kind of burning desire to get there and make it happen. I mean, kudos to all the people involved that got you to Morgan State. So when you get there, does it change your sense of who you want to be?
No, not yet. Not yet. In my mind, it's still music. It's still the music space. You know, it's still all of these things. And that's why I tell people when I'm talking, I always tell people, you have to be careful about how other people project their dreams on you, because that's the path you will actually follow. Mm. And so when you get so engulfed in everybody else's dreams, you don't really make room for your own. You can't think for yourself. You're so invested in what they want for you that you don't make space to actually get clear for what you want for yourself.
That's true.
And so at the time, I was pursuing everybody else's dream for me and not realizing that I had my own dreams. I didn't even know I had my own dreams. Only thing I knew was the fear of God was in me, and people were saying, if you don't sing, you're going to lose your voice. God going to take it from you, you know? And so it was something, but it was something that I also didn't really enjoy. You know, I really didn't enjoy it as much as people thought, but I just knew, okay, this is what people want me to do. This is what I'm going to do. And singing did get me into the doors that it needed to get me into. That was one of the gifts that God used to get me to where he needed me to be. Mm-hmm. And so I got to Morgan and I auditioned. I got all those things. And I still didn't think that food would be this thing that I would be doing. And so I started to get really broke. Okay. And so again, I had nowhere to stay. And so what they had to do was they had to put me in the football quarters with the football team.
No,
and so
didn't.
I said, yes, they did, oh, girlfriend. They put me right on over there with football player. I said, gladly. So I got over there. They asked me, I said, where are you from? Some of the football players. And I told them, I said, I'm from Alabama. And I have this homegirl energy about me, you know? And so they were like, you're fine, you know, like, let's hang out. So they actually became like brothers, a lot of the players that live in the courtyard with me. And one guy, his name was Justin. I never forget. He said, can you fry me some chicken? I said, I sure can. If you go next door to the Save-A-Lot, you bring it over here. I fry for you. And that piece of fried chicken led me to fry more chicken every Sunday and fish and having Sunday dinners. And so I started to sell food out of my dorm. I mean, out of my apartment. I wasn't even supposed to be in an apartment. Keep in mind, I have nowhere to stay. So the guy at the school, he sent me to a guy over at housing, head of housing. And he said, I got to put you across the street off campus. You're not supposed to be over there, but I like you a lot. And I think you go on places and I want you to stay. And so he put me over there. And that's how I made friends with the football team. And I started cooking dinners and selling them. And that's how I made my money. And it just kind of threw me into the food space.
Sure.
And then when MySpace happened and, you know, I started cooking on Snapchat and Vine back in the day, you know, and just doing these little, this little content before content was such a thing. I just fell into it, Kate. It's really, I really don't have any other way to describe it. I literally fell into this space of food thinking that I was going to do something else, but it's like God had such another plan. But what he did was he allowed one talent to carry me to the next thing.
Yes.
And so had I not embraced that talent, had I said, no, I don't want to do this, I would have never gotten on the journey, you know? And so I'm really thankful that he used people and my gifts to allow me to travel to this space of where I am now.
And it sounds like you start cooking, you start cooking for all these football players, then you start selling the food and developing a following, kind of like anyone would when they're creating a business, right? You have a product, you sell it, it's getting great word of mouth, right? You don't need the marketing, it's viral, right? And then you start
I'm going viral on campus.
Right, exactly. You start posting online, and that's really where your career takes off. I read that I think it was your mac and cheese recipe on YouTube was seen literally like 9 million times. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is that true?
Well, that was the first recipe. So, you know, my first viral video hit 52 million views in less than 2 days.
And what was it for?
That was a stuffed salmon. So there's a road even leading up to that video. You know, so like I said, back in the MySpace days and, you know, the Vine days and all that, before Facebook was a thing, you know, it's when I was actually still posting my food photos, you know, and then I got on Facebook and I started cooking live on Facebook when they would allow you to cook live and you would have, you know, music playing before they flagged and all that. It was like real crunk. It was a vibe. So I would cook live on Facebook every single Sunday night for 2 years straight. I did this and it went from 100 people watching to 100,000 people watching every Sunday in a matter of months. And so in less than an hour, I would do a dessert, an appetizer, an entree, and a cocktail.
In 1 hour?
Entertain in 1 hour.
If you were somebody who was looking at your content, what do you think it was that made it go viral? And it's okay to say it was just really good, but I'm just wondering if you had to really analyze it.
That's the thing about it. You know, I wasn't trying to go viral. What I had lost was momentum because at the time I was doing this food content, I was doing stuff, but I was like, I don't know where this is about to take me. You know, I was still singing in Little Spaces, I had started singing, doing background music for R&B artists and things like that, and traveling and touring and all that, but still, you know, posting my food pictures. And when I did the live doing the stuffed salmon, the reason why I got into food, I just want to back up. The reason why I got into food is because of posting food content. It's because I did not, number one, see enough people that looked like me, mm-hmm. that shared our same story, and also that made delicious food that wasn't complicated. Mm-hmm. And so my goal was to get people back in their kitchen to fall in love with food again, or to teach them how to make recipes that were not confusing, that were not complicated, didn't have a whole bunch of fluff, and wasn't no damn turmeric in there and cream of tartar and all this other stuff. And then I was seeing people that were making, you know, our type of soul food. And I'm like, that ain't how we make our food. So there was a lack of representation, number one. There was also a lack of connection with people in yes. food, you know, and that's why I started to cook live and start doing the videos. And I remember one live I did, it was the stuffed salmon. It was on a live, and it was four ingredients, because I prayed and I said, God, if you want me to do this, you got to teach me how to do it where it's not confusing and crazy, because you know me, I'll burn myself out. And I have to say, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And so, you know, I prayed about it and I got this idea to do recipes that were less than five ingredients. Mm-hmm. And so with the stuffed salmon, I made it one night on the live just off of a whim. It was the way that I did the salmon though, Kate. You know, I'm known for doing overindulging type of foods. And so instead of just stuffing the pocket, I took two salmon fillets and put it on top of the stuffing and said, we got a damn salmon sandwich over here. This is what we doing. And so I took cream cheese, I took frozen spinach, and I did that with a little bit of shrimp mm-hmm. and some Parmesan cheese, and that was my stuffing. And then I took two salmon fillets, and I said, we're going to take this and put it in between, and we're going to sear it on both sides. And then I did like a little basting butter sauce at the end, and that was that. And then voila. One person, I never knew, her name was Pam, she said, you need to make this a video for tomorrow. We need the video. And I did the video, and I remember doing that video, me going viral was God's way of throwing me a bone to say, hang in there. Because remember, I'm doing social media with no money. There was no money involved at that time. And I was like, I don't know why you got me doing this. This is a waste of time. This is this. And I did the video the next day. I posted it. I was in my garage crying because I had lost momentum. Mm-hmm. I never forget that. And in less than an hour, it had 2 million views.
Wow.
And after that, you know, things just, they were not the same.
We'll have more on this conversation in just a minute. But first, thank you to our sponsors.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you.
There's a funny thing about most insurance commercials, whether they feature lizards or birds or funny cartoon characters. It seems like they want you to think about anything but insurance. American National, on the other hand, has real local agents who get to know you, so they can help you reach better decisions about your insurance to make sure you're protecting what matters most to you. American National agents are part of your community. They're your neighbors. So whether it's solutions for your home, your small business, your farm, or your life, you can count on your local American National agent to make sure you get the discounts you deserve and the protection you need without paying for extras you don't. With American National, you get an ally, not just a web page. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, and the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine.
To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by Angostura.
If you've ever made a cocktail at home, you've most likely shaken Angostura bitters into your cocktail at the very end of the cocktail making process. In addition to bitters, Angostura has been making world-class rum for more than 130 years. The next fall cocktail you make, try the beautiful, smooth flavor of Angostura rum. It will transport you to the Caribbean islands of Trinidad and Tobago. The House of Angostura will celebrate its 200-year anniversary of turning drinks into cocktails in 2024. Cheers, everyone.
Now back to our conversation.
You mentioned that one of the reasons that you made these videos was connection and community. Can you touch on that? Because I have a feeling the same person making the same recipe might not have had the same success as you for many different reasons, mm-hmm. but one of them might be, that might be a clue. What did you mean when you said connection?
You know, people have to want to feel like they know you. They have to want to feel like they belong in your world. Mm-hmm. They have to want to feel like they are seen, valued, heard, you know, and that somebody actually sees them. And so for me, it was about how do I bridge the gap between people not wanting to be in their kitchen, people that are fed up, that are eating out. And keep in mind, I've also, this is another story, I've lost over 120 pounds. And so for me, it was about getting people back in the kitchen. The way I did that was staying in my kitchen. You know what I mean? And so I was hearing a lot of people talking about how they don't want to cook and they don't want to do this, they don't do that. And I said, how do I change the world one plate at a time? And that is to bring them together. And the way to do that is to make things that seem complicated, uncomplicated. Hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's to take the fear out of it. And so not only did I have people that knew how to cook that felt like, okay, I can actually do this. This is easy for me. There were also people that now follow me that join my community because they said that I gave them hope in cooking. You know what I mean? Like, and at the time I was doing those videos on food stamps. Mm, so my mind also considered people who didn't make a lot of money.
Yes.
How do they still have good food on the table and not bring a sense of despair to them? So how do I take chili beans and rice and all this stuff and make it just delicious and make people want to actually eat food? And so that's what I mean about having that connection, making people feel seen. It's not that people don't want to eat good. Sometimes they just don't know how to.
Right.
Or they don't know how to, can't afford to.
You really bring up a great point, and that is that that's a huge need in our country is to create delicious food at a reasonable price, because so much of the organic, we could go on and on, the different types of ingredients, it's not approachable for the average person. The average person cannot afford it.
Kate, you're right.
You know, it just isn't. I'm sorry. You know, the stuff they see on TV, they can't afford that cut of meat, or they can't afford all of those spices. Right. I mean, some of the spices that a recipe calls for is $8 just for the bottle. You're going to make you think somebody's going to buy that spice just for that one dish? They can't afford that. So the funny part is you didn't even probably, you can look back and see that, but you probably didn't even know it at the time.
Do not make me cry. I've got on my good lashes today, girlfriend. Don't make me. Because you don't understand it was bigger than me.
Yes.
It was me taking even my own resources that I didn't have. And because I prayed and I said, what is it that you want me to do, God, for your people? How do they get satisfied through my gift? And I always tell people, you don't get in business or you don't do anything if it's not going to meet a need. Because then it's going to be for your own self, and that's going to run out.
Yes.
It has to be bigger than you. And so for me, that's what it was about. So it was about me taking $20 that I had and using $10 of it for content and the other 10 to buy diapers for my daughter. You know, because I'm like, people need to know what it's like to have $10. At the time, they didn't even know I was struggling. Nobody would have ever known that. That's what kept me grounded and made me stay connected to people who have been forgotten about. Mm-hmm. Because we have a whole bunch of people out here who get forgotten about, not just in other areas of Hollywood or whatever, but just also just through their plate, you know, just from making delicious food. So yeah, that was a transformative moment for me, and it still is today. I still hold on to it, and it's still what keeps me going.
Yeah, well, congratulations on all your success. It really, when you think about back to how you started it, it's always important to hear someone's genesis story, because you don't really understand someone's story till you hear how it all began. And I think people need to hear how you began to fully get you. You know, Damon John wrote a book, The Power of Broke. And I feel like sometimes when we're in a place of lack, I include myself in this, when you're in a place of lack, you actually can be more creative. It allows you to think outside the box, and it allows you to meet the needs of other people who have a need more authentically than somebody else, you know?
We have to embrace that though, Kate. I love what you just said. That is so true. And I never thought about it that way, but that is so true. Well, kind of, sort of, because it's the reason why I always give the way that I give and the way that I love people the way that I do, no matter if I've known them for years or I'm just sitting there talking to them for a few minutes. When I leave you, I want you to have something to take with you, whether it be encouraging words or whether it be, people always tell me I have a way of making people feel like they can win the Olympics. And that's a God-given gift. But you're right. It comes from a place of lack, the things that I never really got. Mm-hmm. And so I give it freely because it's not about, you know, I never got it, so I want to give it to people. I think that's rooted in a little bit of abandonment, you know, and so to heal from that, to know, like, actually, I want to give it to you because it's just the right thing to do.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I want to pour it to you because it's just the right thing to do. And so hopefully, you know, once you get what you get from me, you share it. And that's, you know, that's my recipes. That's words of encouragement and whatever it is. And you share it with the next person. That's all I ever ask of people.
I want to hear the story of how you go from your YouTube channel, which is wildly successful and posting all your videos, to the Food Network. Because I have a feeling there's a great story there.
It ain't no great. It ain't a big story.
Tell me. But somebody had to find you. Or did you pitch yourself?
They found me on YouTube. It's going to tell you how imposter syndrome works.
Okay.
And it's something that I'm actually working through in therapy religiously. Okay. To the point where I have yet to celebrate any of my accomplishments, but I'm working on that, Kate. I'm working on that. That's what I always tell people. If you don't have to believe in what I believe in, believe in something, because it will come to you. If you do the work, that's what people don't want to do. If you do the work will eventually work for you. You have to be willing to do the work and make the sacrifice. And the same season you plant the seed is not the same season you're going to reap it. Mm-hmm. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I always read in my word, it says the harvest is great, but the laborers are few. And I just knew that I was going to be just YouTube and, like, you know, I do brand deals and all that. And I got this email from a guy named Mike Sheeran, I never forget, based out of Toronto with Nikki Ray Productions, such lovely people. And they emailed me, and I never forget this, it's a funny story. I live here in LA, and my girlfriends and I, we were out, we went to this restaurant called Eating on Brand. It was where we always go on Friday nights. Great food, by the way. And we were drunk as a skunk, honey. Okay. We were lit as a 20-foot Christmas tree. So I go back to my girlfriend's house because they live across the street. You need community here in LA. So they live across the street. Our kids are over there. They're with the sitter. And I get this email from Mike Sheeran. And it says, like, hey, I'm Mike Sheeran from Nikki Ray. And I'm doing this show with Food Network called The Big Bake. And I give it to my girlfriend. I said, girl, look at this. I said, that ain't real. And so we went on about our day, and she was like, you don't think it's real? I was like, that ain't, the Food Network don't want me over there because I'm crazy. You know, I can say anything and do anything. And so I emailed him back, and I won't tell you what I emailed back, but I was like, ha, 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 yeah, right, loser.
No, you didn't.
Like, yeah, whatever. And so they emailed back, and so he followed up and did another email. And at the time, my manager, who recently passed away, but his name is Jason, I sent it to him, and he said, I'm going to follow up. And it turned out to be a real email.
Wow.
And so I got on the call with Mike Sheeran, and he talked about the Big Bake, and he talked about, like, why they wanted me. And I kept looking at the man on the Zoom, and I said, are you sure? Like, it's no way. Mm. Because I had done a pilot with Food Network in 2017, and they had told me no.
Oh, wow.
You know? So, And it was a tough decision. I never forget, somebody at the time that was in the room said that was a hard decision. It was a split. It was one vote that got me out that said no. And so I remember my sister telling me, she said, don't worry about it. They'll be back. They're going to come back around. You just keep working. And so I had just counted out Food Network or, you know, any other network, because I felt like I'm going to just say this and hopefully people will understand and you can understand what I'm saying. I felt like I was too Black. Too
really?
Real. Yeah, too Black, too real. You know, my swag, the way I am, the way I dress, the way I talk, You know, it's just who I am. Yeah. And I was like, that is too much. You know what I mean? Because they had already told me no.
But you had almost counted yourself out. That was the thing. It wasn't even about other people's perception of you. You had already put it out in the universe that perhaps you weren't right. And you were right.
Yes. And I was right. You know, and the thing about it is that I'll never change that journey, because back in that time, like in 2017, when that happened, I wasn't really ready for that. Mm-hmm. I really wasn't. Mm-hmm. The journey that I had to go on to get me to where I was when they did come back around was the journey that I needed. I learned so much. I learned so much about myself, about my food. I was able to build. You know what I'm saying?
What year was it, first of all, when the Food Network, when it actually happened?
2021.
Okay.
I think it's 2021.
Okay. So what do you think happened between 2017 and 2021 that made you ready? Like, what did you learn about yourself or your cooking or who you were that made you actually fully ready to kind of step into this opportunity that you weren't ready for in 2017?
You know, 2017, I was broke as hell. Okay. And so I would have taken that deal out of desperation. That's not, I know now that we never do business when we got desperate. Mm. And the inner work, and coupled with that was the inner work that I needed to do within my own self to build my own confidence, to heal my abandonment issues, to heal the things that were rooted in me that just were not good things. I needed to do the internal work first to be ready for the new path, you know? And so that's one thing. And then I was able to build my audience by literally having self-confidence within myself, but that only came from doing the inner work. You know what I mean? And so I built my audience organically online, and I was able to really give myself out that financial hold. And so now I can do business with anybody because I don't have anything else to lose. You know what I'm saying? I believe in my business and what I'm doing. And also now my confidence is through the roof. And now I could say yes or no to anybody.
Okay, that's great.
And at the time, I was not in that space. I was not. So we see so many people that take those. And I'm not saying it would have been a bad deal. I have no idea.
You would have taken it if it were offered it to you. But you're saying that you were in a... Yeah, you probably would have taken it. But the fact that you were in such a healthier spot in 2021 made it feel right, right? It made it feel right.
Yes. And with that, you know, it wasn't even about the money, about the pay, about any of that. It was about, this is going to be... I literally was going to say no, number one. I was going to say no to Food Network. Because I was like, I got my own thing going on now. I don't want y'all. Y'all didn't want me back then. You know, it was that. Now I'm coming around. Now. I had so much belief in myself because what building that online audience did for me, people don't understand what they did for me by just supporting me, was build my confidence in business and also allow me to see, like, girl, you got it going on. You a bad mama jamma in this kitchen, you know? And when they came back around, it was like, let me see if I can put it in my schedule, you know? But I was on I was just in such a great space, even financially, just spiritually, all of that. And I was talking to my friends here in LA who do a lot of television work, and they said, you're gonna do this, you're gonna take this deal. Cause I didn't even really care about what the money offer was or anything like that. I just knew then, this is another thing that I want to experience in my career. And I think that this is the right thing to do. And I'm so glad that I did.
What have you learned about yourself through this whole process? Now you're a very successful cookbook author. You've been a host on the Food Network. You're still a home cook and love to share recipes and love to cook. I'm just wondering, like, what have you learned about this when you look back at your journey from Morgan State to now?
I learned that I am strong as an ox. That's number one. The strength, the internal strength is like that of an ox. That's one of the things that I've learned about myself is that, and I also have learned that I can endure and I can persevere and I can let things be good. I can accept good things that come into my life. And I can also extract the things that don't serve me. You know, I don't have to take a lot of the BS. I have realized my worth and who I am today. And I've also realized within myself, Kate, that I can do more things outside of the kitchen. being in the kitchen has taught me a level of confidence. And now that I am, I don't want to say I mastered this world, because it's always something new to learn there, but I'm not afraid to branch out and do other things.
What other things would you like to do?
I actually have another project, but I really can't talk about it because I actually couldn't talk about it here, but not yet. That's coming out, that's throwing me more into the lifestyle space. So people don't understand that I'm a material designer. You know, I also am a motivational speaker. I also am a clothing designer. This is my top right here.
That's beautiful.
And so I have a launch of clothing that I'm going to release this year. I always wear nail polish. So I'm working on my nail polish line, red lips. I'm just embracing all of the things that I've always wanted to do that are outside of the kitchen. But the kitchen has gotten me the confidence to actually want to pursue. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, I think you've always been a talented person, period. Not a talented cook or a talented YouTuber. You are a talented person. Are you familiar with the Fawn Weaver? She is the founder of Uncle Nearest Whiskey.
I love Fawn Weaver, and I saw that you interviewed her, and I just was like, oh my God, I love Fawn Weaver.
She left the home when she was about 15 too. Her story has a very similar path in some ways to yours. But one of my favorite quotes from that interview was, I look for the lit paths and I walk on them. And it's almost like your story was about looking for the lit paths, whatever they look like, and you were going to walk on them. And you are a talented person, and that's going to manifest itself in many different ways. And right now you're almost just beginning. Of what's next?
Yeah.
Where are you going to go? You're like, sky's the limit.
You know, and you know, I'm glad you said something about the lit paths, because I always have a saying too. When you're following your destiny and your dream, you're also going to burn bridges too. And you're going to dissatisfy some people. But I always say, may the bridges I burn light the path to my new journey. That's what I say.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. I can't believe I've gotten 40 minutes into this and we haven't even talked about your book. Will you tell people a little bit about your book and why you wrote it?
There are two things about that book. Boy, that was a monster to do. But can I just say this one thing before we move to the book? I just wanted to say this about, and I hope somebody listening, this will help them. Do not let anybody, going back to what I was saying before, do not let anybody stray you from what you feel inside to do. And again, you talk about me just being a talented person. Your talents, every single talent that you have, you should exercise them. Because if you don't, people will box you and you'll stay there. And you'll never get a chance to see what's outside that other door. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And so you can go with what you feel in your heart and don't let anybody box you in. Never, ever, ever let them do that. So I wrote this book, Danny's Juke Joint, because of course I grew up in my dad's juke joint in Birmingham, Alabama. People always ask me like, what is a juke joint? So I'll say it here for those who hadn't gotten the book, and I don't know why they ain't got the book. Y'all got to get the book. But a juke joint is an establishment that was created back in the Jim Crow times when Black people could not party with white people down in the South. And so Black people do what we do best. We create our own spaces. And so it's a place where people will go and hang out and, you know, eat good food and dance and drink liquor and moonshine and all that. And they were created way back in the day. And a lot of them still exist today. As a matter of fact, I actually just went to one in Houston, Texas called the Red Rooster, and I had a good old time. So they're still alive and well today. And so they're just hole in the wall places that it's like a, if you know, you know. And my daddy's was literally right next to our house, literally like two steps away. So our home we grew up in was to the right, and then the juke joint was to the left, and it was just two steps away. And so growing up in the juke joint, I learned a lot about people and I learned a lot about entertainment. And so my family, I come from a family of entertainers, and when I'm not music entertainers or anything like that, but they like to entertain people. Mm-hmm. And so my dad always liked to have people over. My mom always liked to have people over, and he loved the juke joint because that was a space for him to really have an outlet. And so people would come all the time. And I always used to be like, wow, these people coming over here. And it would be because my mother was frying fish in the back and chicken. And then people would get some whiskey, or they can dance, they can do all type of stuff. And I grew up in that type of environment all majority of my life until I left home. when I started doing content on social media, I would do that live from Danny's Juke Joint, which would be my kitchen. And so the only thing I knew how to do was go back to what I know, and that is to entertain, you know, but how do I entertain now from a distance? And of course, we had social media to do that. So I would crank the music up. I would be playing Al Green and the Isley Brothers, all that on my Facebook Live. And we would just have a good time and create these recipes. And that's what inspired the book. And I really wanted to bring more awareness to juke joint culture, because I feel like it is a culture that is not talked about within the Black community enough. And it's not highlighted enough. We're always talking about where our food comes from and the diaspora part of, you know, our cuisine, but we never really talk about entertainment through our Black culture. And this is a thing that is still prevalent today that nobody really talks about, and they don't know, you know? And so I really wanted to, again, as we always say, meet a need.
Fill a need.
Highlight something that is not talked about enough within our community and our culture, and is so prevalent in our culture. And so it's like, why don't people know about this, know more about this? Why don't we have travel shows that are talking about juke joints? Why, you know, why not people not writing pieces on this? You know, it is, how do we celebrate Black history and not mention such a crucial part of our history that is centered around food and entertainment? So we always talk about how delicious our food is. We always talk about Black people and how we entertain musically and, you know, things like that. But this is also a part of our culture that is not often talked about. And you have literally stars today that are still going to the juke joint to hang out and have a good time, because it is a part of our culture that is so welcoming and so inviting. And I just really wanted the world to know about it. So that's why I wrote it.
I love it. And you're right. I've never read a book about juke joint culture. And the fact that you would take the time to really flesh it out, I really think speaks to the need that you wanted, that you identified, that you, and it's so authentically you, right? Because you grew up there. I mean, this, what they always say when writing a story, start with what you know, and what is more you, Danny Rose, than this story? What kind of recipes, what kind of food is like the standout in this book?
Okay, so, you know, it's not just I don't want people to think that it's just like a Southern cookbook, because I always tell people I am not a soul food cook. I am a cook from the South.
Yes.
It's two different things. You know
what
I mean?
I do get
and
that.
And so I have stories in there talking about like my mom and her girlfriends and the social savings club, because the social savings club is also part of the juke joint culture, you know, where you would pay $20 for a party to go to their party, and it's BYOB, or it's all you can drink, food and liquor, you know, for $25. I just went to one a couple months ago in Alabama. I had a good old time. And so I talk about that. We have things like, you know, one of my favorite recipes in there is chicken fried chips with caramelized dip. And that is caramelized onion dip. And that is a play on the Social Savings Club chips and dip, you know, funny stories in there. But I also have a little bit of my LA culture in there. So I have a cocktail in there that's called The Suburban Mom, you know, and it talks about me and my girlfriends going to get margaritas and chips and dip, you know, in our yoga pants, because we in LA now, you know, and so we get so tipsy, honey, we can't hardly make it to carpool sometimes, but you know, so it's a margarita mixed with a sangria, you know what I mean? So we have that. Then I have, you know, pulled pork pancakes, because I do not like chicken and waffles. It is not a Southern thing. I really wish people would stop making it what it is not. It ain't Southern. And I hate chicken and waffles. I talk about that. But I had these pulled pork that is topped with cheddar scallion pancakes. And it's really delicious, sweet and tangy barbecue sauce. Yeah. So that's my idea of having like a really good brunch. So I always tell people, if chicken and waffles is a Southern thing, why ain't Waffle House making it?
You know what? You, first of all, you're hilarious. You are an entertainer. I can see both your mom and your dad's influence on you. Again, it goes back to you are just a talented person, period. You should never just box yourself in, because I can see that from thousands of miles away here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm interested to know, when you look at, you know, you talked about some of the things you wanted to do. You talked about your cooking. The cooking you're describing sounds absolutely delicious, but it does sound very fattening. And I'm wondering, with your, you just hinted at your dramatic weight loss. Can you talk a little bit about that journey, and how did you incorporate some of the amazing dishes that you're talking about with also losing weight?
Yeah, so I always tell people too much of anything is bad for you. You know what I'm saying? And I have girlfriends out here who are vegan and they still gain a bunch of weight during COVID. You know what I mean? So I always say there's no bad food. It's just bad relationship with food. Mm-hmm. So if you develop a great relationship with food, you will be fine. For me, I've always been an active person. My mom is 75. Don't look 75. I mean, she is traveling the world right now doing all type of stuff. So we've always been an active family. Mm-hmm. When I gained that weight, the 100 pounds, it was due to my pregnancy.
Okay.
And so I knew that was also part of my journey. Yes. You know, I had never had to lose that much weight before. And so I, again, prayed, how do I eat the food that I love, but also eat the food that I need to actually lose this weight? And so I got into strength training. So I lift a lot of weights. And I always tell people it's the 70-30 rule for me every day. It's 70% of what I need, what my body needs, not the empty calories, which is the fried food and all that. And 30% of what I actually want, which can be my Popeyes, which can be my chicken fried chips and dip, which can be my Suburban Mom cocktails. And so I also incorporate a lot of fasting into my diet too.
Oh, okay. And so
before fasting was a thing, but I don't do intermittent. I don't do an eating window. No.
What do you do?
Simply push my first meal of the day back into the day. That's all I do.
Okay.
Because at the time when I was trying, before fasting was this thing on the internet,
yeah,
I was still traveling and touring and doing all these things as a background singer. And I was saying a window doesn't fit me. You know, I'm going to fail. And so I know with weight loss, you got to set yourself up for success. And so I'm like, well, how can I do this? And so I don't do the eating window. I saw the same results doing the eating window that I do just pushing the first meal of the day back. And following that 70-30 rule or 80-20 rule. And so I always tell people to set yourself up for success as much as possible. So you can't really think you're going to have a big, huge social life and still try to lose weight. You know what I mean?
Right,
because
yeah.
alcohol, there's yes. going to sleep late, you're doing all these type of things. And so I always plan my outings at the time. So if I knew, okay, Monday through Thursday, I'm going to make sure that I'm doing my workouts, I'm, you know, eating my 80-20 or 70-30, and then I have an outing with my girls on Friday, then I'm going to be doing X, Y, and Z on Friday. I'm not going to deprive myself. I'm do whatever I want. And then Saturday, I'm going to make sure I'm also moving. You know what I mean? I'm not laying in the bed. I'm moving. And in 9-10 months, you know, 100 pounds was off just
wow.
from just keeping.
Yeah,
so
good for you.
I did gain a little weight during COVID, though. I ain't gonna hold you, 25 pounds. And, you know, just had to work that off, too. But before COVID, I kept that weight off for 12 years, just from literally following that simple rule. And I don't beat myself up about the fasting and all that. If I want to go eat an early meal in the morning, you know, Waffle House, if I'm traveling, I'm gonna go do that. You know, I am. And I'm going to get back on track the next day. And I think that's where we lose ourselves. We don't get back on track. You know, we say, okay, I had one bad meal. It's no such thing as a bad meal either. I had waffles and this and that. And so now my diet is just gone. But for me, I had to turn into a lifestyle. And so it's just always getting back on the horse, always saying, okay, this is what I indulged in the day before. Today, it's going to be all about fruits, veggies, yogurts, you know, chia seeds, smoothies, all the things that I need to keep me on the right track.
You have had an incredible journey. I'm wondering, what advice would you give to a young Dani who is, you know, just leaving college, that is just really getting started on their path that has served you well?
Get it, girl. And when it's got, go get some more.
I love it.
That's anything that come your way that you think you want, you better go get it.
Yeah.
And don't you be afraid. You know what I'm saying? I always tell people, shoot for the moon. And if you miss, you'll land among the stars.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You know, so I would tell her, and I would tell her, don't you take no mess off of no man. Okay. Because that girl back in the day, she took a lot of mess off people. But I take it, don't take no mess off a man. Don't take a mess off a woman. And always think for yourself. You know, but at the end of the day, if anybody is listening to this, I'll tell you, go get it. Whatever that get it is, go and get it. And when it's got, get you some more.
Well, I have enjoyed this conversation so much, Dani. I wish you continued success and really a wonderful and blessed 2024.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate this so much. It's been such a great time.
Thanks for listening to Dine For the Podcast. For more information on the show, the guests, and the podcast, head to thedinefortv.com. You can find us on Instagram at To Dine For TV and Facebook at To Dine For with Kate Sullivan. Thanks to the sponsors of To Dine For the podcast, American National and Terlato Wine Group. Special thank you to producer and sound editor John Golmer. To the loyal followers of this program, cheers, stay hungry, and stay inspired. I'll see you back at the table soon.
How does appreciation feel to you? A rising rush of warmth? A building wave of confidence? At Reward Gateway Edenred, we know appreciation appreciates in value. Starting with people, radiating through companies to transform their performance and productivity. Capture the power of appreciation with our total employee experience platform.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.